In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive.
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator.
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911. There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
And welcome to another episode of Strange Planet. Great to have you aboard. And on this episode, investigative journalist, defender of human rights, author Janet Phelan is here to discuss her book, At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. This came out in 2021, really at the height of the pandemic, or plandemic, if you'd rather. Let me just crib here from the back cover. From lead pipes in Flint, Michigan, to a duplicitous water commission in Medford, Oregon, to a secret psychiatric ward at UCLA, to the elegant halls of the Palace of Nations in Geneva, Switzerland, At the Breaking Point of History relentlessly details the U.S. government's indifferences to the welfare of individuals and to its legal obligations under national and international accords prohibiting human experimentation in biological and chemical weapons, Phelan uncovers shocking machinations executed at the highest and lowest levels of power, pointing towards a pandemic of as yet unrealized proportions. Janet Phelan, welcome to Strange Planet. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on your show, Richard.
My pleasure. Previous to this book, I think it was 2014, you wrote Exile, which sort of documents your, well, you kind of dabbled in legacy media, and then at a certain point, there was a point where you just said, we're being lied to, everything we thought we knew about our country is a fabrication, and you literally put yourself into self-imposed exile. Can you just kind of walk me through what happened?
Sure. Well, I did more than dabble in legacy media. Actually, I was fairly firmly entrenched in writing for mainstream media. I did my graduate work in journalism at the University of Missouri at Columbia and had written mostly freelance, which is probably what saved my soul, for a variety of publications for a number of years. And around 2001, it became clear to me that we weren't getting the full story from the mainstream media at all. And I started using the tools of my trade to write and investigate and expose certain inconvenient realities. So the exile, more than being self-imposed, was actually a necessity. I don't want to go into this in great detail right now, but basically I got some very bad attention from the authorities, and it became clear to me that I just better get out of Dodge. So in 2008, I left the US and I was in Canada for a couple of years trying to get status to stay in Canada. I had gotten a job offer to teach journalism at an interesting school, actually. And the letter came in from Immigration Canada saying, we're not giving you a work visa, leave Canada immediately. So here I am in Mexico.
All right.
That's kind of the short version without all of the gory details.
Okay. Well, we'll direct people to the book Exile, which is available, I'm guessing, at Amazon. Still?
No, it's not. It's only available right now at thebookpatch.com.
Thebookpatch.com.
That's right. Right. Not on it on Amazon. Right.
Right. So look for the, for listeners, you can look for that link in the episode notes, and that'll take you right there. And you can get the full story of Janet Phelan's exile. This book, At the Breaking Point of History, isn't entirely about the pandemic. Of course, it certainly looms large in the book, but you had been predicting a pandemic or a plandemic for quite some time.
That's right.
When did you start seeing the writing on the wall that we were going to have a pandemic?
Well, I started researching this rather a strange alternate delivery system around 2004. When I became aware that there were, that the water systems, certainly in Los Angeles, and as my research began to expand, I began to realize elsewhere as well, had been tweaked. And so I was at that point writing, in 2004, I was writing a weekly column at the Santa Monica Daily Press, and I used that position to start making Public Records Act requests water records. Many of those requests and the bizarre responses are archived in At the Breaking Point of History. And actually, I lost my job at the Santa Monica Daily Press for making a Public Records Act request at City Hall in Santa Monica. I had walked into the engineering department and asked for certain records having to do with water systems. And within 6 hours, I got a phone call from the editor of the Santa Monica Daily Press. And she was very upset. She said she had not authorized me to ask any questions about water. and I was endangering her position as editor of the Santa Monica Daily Press by simply asking these questions. So I went over to the office immediately. I thought, well, we've got to talk about this, but the decision had already been made, and I was finito. That was the end of that. So
what did you suspect was being done with the water, the municipal water in Santa Monica?
Well, I had already consulted with a number of engineers about how it could be that a system could deliver different waters or different substances to different dwellings. I had been tipped off that this was the case, and the tip off was serious enough that I started to look at this. And so the engineers kind of sat down with me and explained, well, you could do it this way. You could have two water lines and then, you know, and so forth. So when I started researching this, I began to realize that the input from the engineers was absolutely right, and that we had two water lines or two main lines that are delineated as water running down the street through Santa Monica, through Los Angeles, through Spokane, different places in Idaho, many different places I began to research. Except the interesting thing was this second line, one line, I mean, there's no problem. Everybody knows that you can get blueprints from City Hall showing you the one line. They won't show you the second line. So they won't admit to it. So I found out that it exists. And I found out by hanging around street crews. I developed a back door for blueprints. So I started hanging around street crews trying to get their copies of blueprints, because they actually had the real blueprints, the non-redacted blueprints. And that was a back door that I developed in Los Angeles. I used another back door when I was looking at the prints in Spokane. There was a meeting in a local restaurant, because there was a lot of work being done on the streets and businesses were being disrupted, and the city had meetings with business owners to discuss what was going on with all that. And I went to that meeting, and then after the meeting, I kind of sidled up to the engineer in charge. I said, could I look at the blueprints? And he showed them to me, and I took pictures. That's what I did. I took pictures. Nobody liked that very much, because what I found with those blueprints, when you compare them to what the city was actually giving me, whether we're talking about Medford, Oregon, Spokane, Washington, Los Angeles, they would give me blueprints showing one line, not two lines. There was something very sensitive about that second line. So I had to kind of come to grips with what that could be, because the engineers that I had consulted with prior to working on this had explained to me that if there was going to be some sort of plan to make additional selective inputs to water, like through the main line into the service line. The service line is what connects the main line with, let's say, your house, Richard, or with my house. Okay, that's the service line. So if that was going to happen, there would have to be two mains. So one, we'll call it the regular water line. Let's call the other, call it anything we want to. We call it the COVID line. We can call it the vodka line. You want to get somebody drunk, you run vodka through that second line, and then it can be opened up and distributed through the service line with the use of remote control valves. So another leg of this research involved remote control valves, and that's also discussed in the book. So we have a fairly science fiction type scenario here, where the government can actually dose individual houses, individual neighborhoods with something extra. I have no idea what that something extra might be. I'm not a biologist or a biochemist, and I have not been able to confirm you know, the way the system is set up, they can run anything they want to through that second line. They can run vodka, they can run bourbon, they can run arsenic, anything they want to. What I have done is to confirm and to basically detail how the delivery system works.
So, that reminds me of a story I read that quickly disappeared in the early 2000s in USA Today, and it might have been on page 6 or 9. I can't remember. Just a little story, and it was a, I believe it was a memo from some undersecretary of some department in the U.S., just floating the idea of, in the event of some, let's say, economic collapse, adding lithium to the municipal water supplies.
To make people feel better, right? Lithium, to make people feel better? Yes. I mean, lithium is the...
To quell any sort of uprising and so forth. And that story, right, of course, quickly disappeared, never to be heard from again.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how they could do it. You know, recently there was a big flurry. A doctor, Brian Artis, was claiming that they were putting snake venom into water systems. And actually, you know, I have no idea what the second line contains, but if it did contain something like snake venom, this is how they would do it. And they would have to do it in a selective manner so that they're not dosing themselves.
Right? So this is the possible mechanism for another delivery system. What are they delivering exactly? We're not sure.
No, we're not sure at all.
Mm-mm. But you also, with regards to the pandemic, you traced evidence of pre-planning back to about 2001, even before. It had to do with a change to the, after 2001, a change to the U.S. Mm-hmm. Patriot Act, something called Section 817.
Right. And in Section 817 of the USA Patriot Act, the U.S. Government gave itself immunity from violating its own biological weapons laws. It's right there in black and white. Now, why the media didn't report on that, I really can't say. But when I found that, it sort of knocked me off sideways. It's right there in black and white. The prohibitions contained in this section, the prohibitions having to do with, you know, the use of biological weapons, who can use them, who can't use them, you know, you can't use them, basically. The prohibitions contained in this section shall not apply to any duly authorized U.S. governmental activity. Bingo! You've given yourself a carte blanche. Now, one of the more interesting things concerning this is that this could be seen as a violation of the international treaty known as the Biological Weapons Convention. And I twice traveled to Geneva, Switzerland, to the Biological Weapons Convention under the mantle of an NGO that I created back around 2009 for the purposes of engaging the UN on selected issues. So twice I attended the Biological Weapons Convention and did some research while I was there. And I discovered, guess what? The US is mandated to report any changes in biological weapons activity, including laws, to the convention at large. Did the U.S. report this sort of shocking change? No, they did not. And so the research began to look more and more at legalisms, how the U.S. was actually protecting itself in ways, should it launch a pandemic, so that it would be able to have kind of a carte blanche with this. I also looked quite a bit at human experimentation projects, ongoing ones, not just the things that were exposed in the Church and Pike hearings back in the 70s. I also did some research, and it is lodged in the book, having to do with what I call the U.S.'s obsession with genetics. And you know, and with collecting DNA, and the possibilities that gene weapons can actually be used again against selected portions of populations, those with particular genetic profiles, i.e., racial groups. So all of this research basically draws very heavily on legacy media sources might report on something briefly and then drop it like a hot potato, like you had mentioned earlier, with the lithium and the water supplies.
Well, these expansion, I guess, of the bioweapons program in the United States, which would basically allow them to, deny before the bioweapons convention in Geneva or wherever. So the question, I guess, that arises is this: how do we know then the difference between a pandemic and a bioweapon?
How do we know indeed? Well, we know what we're told. You know, we're told that somebody ate a sick bat in Wuhan and the whole world went into free fall. That's what we're told. The fact is that with the revelations that are coming out about COVID and about the fatality rate from an illness rate from the vaccines, and given the existence of this bizarre and almost unreported delivery system, you know, we have a scenario where we're being told one thing, but the truth is emerging that something else entirely is going on. So the question is, who do we trust anymore, Richard?
Janet, we'll take a quick time out. Janet Phelan stays with us as we continue to delve into her book, At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. Back with more in a moment. Stay with us.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The truth will set you free. Free. But first, it will really tick you off. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Janet Phelan is with us, investigative journalist, defender of human rights, and her 2021 book is At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. Just following up on my previous question just before the break there, and that is, how do we tell the difference between a pandemic and a bioweapon? So what in this case would be the bioweapon the virus manufactured in a lab through gain of function, or is it the vaccine, or is it both?
Well, these are very good questions, and I always try to stand back from questions like this because I am not a medical professional. I'm a reporter who has located something very, very weird going on with not only U.S. water systems. This was also found in Toronto, in Canada. It was found in Israel, in both Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. It was found in post-invasion Iraq and in Geneva, Switzerland, and in at least one major city in Latin America. And that's considered to be an incomplete list. So we have, on one hand, we have a covert, largely hidden delivery system, which can make anybody sick with goodness knows what. And then we have the governments of the world going, oh, we had a pandemic. Well, you know, I think it becomes difficult to answer these questions. When I'm surveying the current data, it looks like people are getting blood clots from the vaccine. I never got vaccinated. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. It looks like a lot of people died from mismanagement of COVID as well. I mean, this whole scandal of what happened in the nursing homes, where governors would send, you know, like Cuomo, sent sick people who still had COVID into nursing homes, which were basically petri dishes for further infection. I mean, there's you know, and then suddenly he has to resign because of a Me Too scandal. I mean, that was right. Like the cover up of cover ups, right?
And how many seniors' deaths were hastened by the use of these ventilators being intubated?
That too.
When of course you're just suppressing the immune system even further. And finally, they stopped that practice. But we now know that the hospitals were receiving, at least in the United States, through Medicare or Medicaid, were receiving kickbacks every time a patient was admitted with COVID or was placed on a ventilator. That was even a bigger cash cow for them. Put someone on a ventilator and it's cha-ching.
Oh, $29,000 per ventilated patient. That's what the CARES Act mandated. Yeah. So there were all these mechanisms in place that either through mistake, error, or some sort of darker intention, ended up with more deaths. I remember after the announcements had come out that you can't use the ventilators on sick people, and generally speaking, because if they have COVID, then it's just going to kill them. I was listening to the radio in south of the border, and they were talking about how they'd had an upsurge of deaths of cases in a particular city, and all these people were ventilated in the hospital. So even while the U.S. had realized that they were hastening people's deaths by doing this, other countries were still using the ventilators. And in southern Mexico, where I am now, the word got out very quickly that if you get sick with something, do not go to the hospital because you will not come out. And instead, people began sharing enormously what kind of herbs they were using. Were they drinking, mumu tea? I mean, what they did, how they stayed at home and cured their COVID, because people became very frightened because the reports were that you go to the hospital and you died.
Tell me about Randall Larson. He's the head of something called the Weapons of Mass Destruction Center in Washington, D.C.
Right. He was, let me just pull up the book real quickly. He was a colonel, I believe. And I don't know if the WMD Center is still active or not, but what it was when I wrote this article. And here it is, page 18. So he was heading up the WMD Center, which also had a couple of other big names attached to it in terms of senators and so forth. And they were sounding the alarm some time ago. Randall Larson was specifically, he thought the peanuts were going to be a big venue for biological weapons and terrorism. And I picked up on the story. The story appeared in some mainstream venue, and I picked it up and I contacted Randall Larson, and he was going on and on about peanuts and how they were gonna attack the peanuts, and peanuts were gonna kill people. And I thought, well, this is interesting. So I started asking him about the water systems, and he shut down. He shut off the contact with me. He shut off the interviews, and he wrote me. After reading some of your pieces on the internet about the Patriot Act, I assure you we will have no further conversations or email exchanges. Sorry, I wasted your time and mine. So it seemed like there was a lot of disinformation that was being put out prior to the pandemic. Watch out for the peanuts, watch out for this, watch out for that. And a lot of money went into BioWatch, which was to surveil airborne possible vectors for a biological weapons or pandemic. They don't know which they're talking about half the time. But almost no money went into surveilling water systems. So,
all right, Janet, another time out back with more of our conversation right after this.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Investigative journalist Janet Phelan is with us, the author of Exile and At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. Since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, a number of people have been asking themselves, are we in the midst of World War III, even though, it's a regional war so far? In fact, there was a French historian that was recently quoted, Emmanuel Todd, who says we are already in World War III. But the combatants here doesn't seem to be clearly delineated. It doesn't seem to be, the Russians versus the West or the Ukrainians versus the Russians. It seems to be the ruling class versus the rest of us. I mean, is this what World War III is? We are the enemy? And this is all about what, depopulation?
Well, I have very strong viewpoints on that. I think that what you just said, Richard, is very close to accurate. And I think there are certain agendas that are being pushed through having to do with what I call purifying the planet of undesirables. We can see, for example, looks like the COVID deaths hit far more people of color, Black people, Indigenous people. The rates aren't really clear. The CDC has released some figures on this, and I don't tend to trust the CDC figures. So I've been doing my own sort of research on this, and I chose to look at police departments, because with police departments, if you have an officer down with COVID, let's say, it will appear on every police page, and you'll get a picture of the officer, so you can see, was the officer Black, Hispanic, Asian, white, whatever. And what I'm finding, this is an ongoing project that has taken up a lot of time because there's a lot of police departments in the U.S., but there's beginning to be a profile that when you're looking at big city police departments like New York or Los Angeles, the majority of those officers who died of COVID are Black or Hispanic. When you're dealing with smaller police departments, good grief, they may not even have Black or Hispanic officers, but you don't see that sort of profile, but you're certainly seeing it in the big cities. So I think there is a racial agenda and a class agenda here as well. And I think that there are certain people who aren't going to be considered to be eligible to join the New World Order. And I think those people are being taken off the planet.
It would seem that they would also want to get rid of the non-compliant. So those people that refused the vaccine, then they have, I guess, something else in mind for the rest of us.
Well, the recent reports are that the FBI is collecting the fingerprints of those who are unvaccinated.
The teachers in New York.
Why would they do that? Right, the teachers. Yeah, that has just come out. Yeah, why would they do that? Why would they want to track people? But it does go to support that observation as well.
You wrote this book sort of in the height of the pandemic. If you were to come out with, and maybe you are, I don't know, a second edition or a revised edition, I mean, what have you since learned? I know you're now studying sort of the racial component of the victims of COVID, but what have you learned since the book was published in September of 2021 that you think you would put in a revised or a second edition?
Well, I'm very concerned about how COVID is being used at an international level to cement a sort of one health global authority. There are basically two prongs of what's going on now at the UN and the WHO. One is the creation of a pandemic treaty, and the other is the amending of the international health regulations. And either of these can end up accomplishing basically a totalitarian global system of healthcare in which sovereign nations will lose their health sovereignty individuals will lose their health sovereignty. And should there be another pandemic or another report of a pandemic, you'll basically be, you will have to comply with these international protocols. And this concerns me greatly.
It seems we're being prepped already for the next one. Maybe it's the avian flu. They're talking about injecting vaccines into poultry and so forth. Is that your sense that they're ramping up for the next one and it might be avian flu?
It might be. There was a big stir about monkeypox recently. And I think that we're being kept sort of on the edge of our seats. I believe that we may be okay until like 2024, which is when these amendments and possible pandemic treaty may become matters of reality. But I think once we have entered into that scenario where we no longer have any choice over how we treat ourselves if we're sick, then I think at that point we'll be at the mercy of another pandemic. I do believe that.
They're also floating the idea of if they haven't already, putting these mRNA vaccines into cattle, into livestock, also perhaps even into vegetables. So even if we don't want it, we're going to get it.
Well, yes. And unfortunately, I think there is a way to stop this. I think it's going to take a concerted effort. But I think that there is enough evidence now that COVID was a manufactured crisis.
Well, hopefully we can wake up enough people, a critical mass, will back away and decide not to try this again until they concoct some other scheme, whether it's 15-minute cities and digital IDs and climate lockdowns. Who knows what's in store? But we can only, I guess, tackle these things as they come at us one at a time.
I think that there are ways that we may be able to protect our health sovereignty and to dissuade even the most recalcitrant global officials from launching this one world health stuff, which will, you know, pretty much put us onto a conveyor belt for wherever they want to take us. I did apply to be on the pandemic treaty committee. I have this NGO and I am certainly able to use this to engage in different treaty organizations, including a prospective pandemic treaty. And it is my intent, should this abomination get actually passed into international law, that I or others with similar intent may very well be able to use the model of creating the NGO, going to Geneva and presenting irrefutable evidence that we're dealing with a situation that we don't need to deal with. So this is kind of a plan that I'm working on now. And I know that there are other wonderful researchers and investigators out there who are doing everything they can to inform people and to, you know, let people know that we're on this road now, and it looks like the road has a definite terminus, and it's not going to be a terminus that we want. So this is something that I plan to do if I'm, God willing. Yeah.
Janet, thank you so much for your time. Again, the book is At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.